Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
Last rock, eighth end, up by two.
Should we all there?
I don't think I'm white.
I don't think you are either.
Oh.
It's clean. Don't kill it, Ben.
Line's really good. Line's good. Right on the button, guys. Right
here,
guys.
Last stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The sweepers are watching it. Fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out. As a champion, cuts him to one. He will win his final Grand Slam, taking the Players' Championship. Talk about putting an exclamation mark at the end of a career. All he had to do was cut him down. Kevin Martin can celebrate. He is a champion.
Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Inside Curling. I'd like to fully recognize our sponsors and thank all of them. Sports Interaction, who brings you what is happening around the curling world. Nestle Boost is the sponsor of Mailbag. Coyote Tractor brings you hot rock topics. And Storytime, we do it each and every week, is sponsored by Meridian. And our guest segment is brought to you by Goldline. We hope everyone's been following every day since the start of the Olympics on our daily show, which has been a lot of fun. It drops every day around 1 o'clock, and we'll do it right through to the end of the Olympics to bring you up to date on everything curling at the Games in Beijing. Hey, Kevin. Hey, Warren.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Did you guys get my cinnamon hearts, Kev? It's Valentine's weekend. Did you? I sent you. They were out of flowers, so I went with the cinnamon hearts.
I guess they're in the mail.
Yeah, they must be. Here's what's on the show today. A good number of provinces and territories held their playdowns this week for their championships to see who will go to the Brier. So we're going to review that. This could be a very hot rock topic. Russia is suspended from the Olympics for doping, yet Russian athletes are allowed to compete under the name of the Russian Olympic Committee, ROC. Is that really restricting Russia from playing in the Olympics? I don't think so. I think we all know it's Russia. So we're going to take a look at that. Mailbag. We got a ton of emails. And this week, we're going to take a look at one of the most interesting ones, a suggestion of how to reduce blank ends. We're very pleased. We're going to be joined for our In the House segment by EJ Hardnett, who just won the Northern Ontario Playdowns to whip their way into the Brier. I think it's his 13th or 14th Brier. Kevin, you got a story for us. You've got some good ones, Martin, too, that have been well received and funny. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you want to email us, do it at insidecurling@gmail.com. Okay, let's get to it, boys. What's happening around the curling world is brought to you by Sports Interaction, providing competitive odds on all sports. Sports Interaction is Canada's odds maker, and you got to be 19 and play responsibly. Okay, Warren. Provincial playdowns, getting set for the Brier coming up next month. What do you got for us?
Okay, we'll start from the West Coast and move east. In BC, determined a couple of weeks ago, veteran player Brent Pierce is going back to the Brier. In Alberta, no surprise there, Kevin Cooey will represent that province. Yesterday, the playoff in Saskatchewan was between Colton Flash and Matt Dunstan. Flash won that. In Manitoba, Mike McEwen's going to be the representative. He defeated the combination of Lott Simmons. In Ontario, interesting one here, veteran Glenn Howard is going back to the Brier again. But Glenn wasn't playing, it was his son Scott that was skipping the team, and they defeated John Epping in the Ontario playoff. Brad Jacobs won Northern Ontario again. Quebec does not have a playoff scheduled. What's going to take place, according to Felix Asselin telling me yesterday, that the association is going to determine a representative, that'll be known by February 16th because that's the deadline. In New Brunswick, another perennial winner, Jim Grattan. He's back again out of Nova Scotia. Paul Fleming, and it appears from what I can dig out that team was appointed because he did not run a playoff. Tried to find something about PEI. Nothing on their website. No information as to what's taking place there, so we don't know. Newfoundland Labrador had a playoff. Nathan was the winner. Again, Yukon, the same as PEI. Can't seem to find out what's going on there. Nothing on their website. Northwest Territories, Jamie Cooey, again, was the winner from that area. Nunavut, Wade Kingdon, and of course, Team Canada will be Brendan Botcher. So the interesting thing is now there's going to be three wildcard teams appointed, I would suspect, over the next week or so, maybe quicker. The interesting one is going to be Brad Gushue, who, of course, is playing in the Olympics, but would certainly be eligible as wildcard, being number one in the world at the moment, or certainly in Canada. Will he be asked to play? Will he play? The teams, as I see it right now, if Brad Gushue does not participate, Matt Dunstan, who is currently ranked number five, Tanner Horgan, who's number nine, and the Pat Simmons-Lott combination, who are number 12. That's the way I would see it if Gushue isn't going to be considered.
Do you possibly think, Warren, that Gushue, if he can go to the Briar, would not go to the Briar?
Well, I guess, Kevin, I'm not sure whether they would ask him or where that all sits. Nobody seems to be saying anything. So maybe it's kind of been left out there to see what he does with the Olympics and kind of see how he's feeling. And maybe they will ask him. Certainly, if Brad is a medal winner, I think they would love to have him in the Briar. It would certainly be an added attraction. So we'll wait and see.
Kev, there may be hope for you. Warren, did you say one of the skips from the Maritimes is 53 years old?
Brent Pierce.
Wow. Maybe there's both hope for both of you to go back to the Briar. You too, Warren.
It'll have to be a stick Briar, Jim, if I'm going to play in it, because my left knee wouldn't quite agree to it.
Yeah, you and I were talking last night about how as we get older, we can't. Our golf swings, Kev, are getting shorter and shorter and shorter, so it would be as tough to curl. Now it's time for Hot Rock Topics, and this could be a hot one, a sizzling one. It's brought to you by Coyote Tractor, proud partner of Team Brad Jacobs and the Grand Slam of Curling. Coyote, we dig dirt. So let me read this, boys, and get your reaction on all of this. It's a little off the page for us, but quite interesting. Russia has been suspended by the IOC for doping, so the result is Russian athletes can compete, but not under the Russian flag, and must be called the representatives of the Russian Olympic Committee. I guess the first question is, does anyone think this isn't Russia? No, would be. I don't. A 50-year-old Russian figure skater, it was revealed a few days ago, tested positive for a banned substance before arriving in Beijing. Because Kamila Valeva competed in the team event, helping Russia win gold, the resolution of her case could also have an impact for skaters on three different teams, the U.S., Japan, and Canada. If Russia is disqualified, those three teams would be upgraded to gold, silver, and bronze in the team event, respectively. Yet no one will say anything except it's all under review. I thought this thing was supposed to be handled last Sunday. In 2018, curling was touched by doping when Russian bronze medalist Alexander Kruzhelnitsky was banned for 4 years for testing positive and had to return the bronze medal. Kind of makes everyone scratch their head about this thing. Why are Russian athletes even allowed in the Olympics? I know Dick Pound said maybe it's time for a big timeout for Russia. Warren, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, I think it's getting crazy. Another announcement out this morning that internal review committee that looked at this entire situation with the young Russian girl who's, I might add, only 15 years old, so she's a minor, and so they're kind of trying to overlook it to some degree because of her age. But somebody here, an adult, needs to be held accountable for what's taking place here, and they don't seem to be too interested in doing it because she's going to be skating again in, I believe, the singles competition here in the next couple of days. And as of today, they have said she can go ahead and do that. They're going to review it further, and there's going to be a decision made later in the year with regard to this whole doping issue. And so this is becoming crazy. I think the aspect of the Olympics and drugging, I think if an athlete is found to have drugs in their system, I think they've got to be gone immediately. I don't care what their age is. I think if more than one athlete from a country has anything tied with doping in any one Olympics, that country should be suspended probably for a period of time. If they don't get tough with it, particularly with Russia, it's just going to get crazy. So I don't understand where they're going, that we have to call them the ROC versus Russia. They can't fly the flag. Yet the president of Russia shows up for the opening ceremonies, and that seems to be okay too. So really a lot of mixed messaging here, and I think the IOC has to really clean up their act in this whole thing. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, I don't know the story with the figure skaters, so I don't want to go into there at all. Just from a purist with sports, you just want a level playing field. Everybody that plays sport, you just want to walk on the field and everybody have a chance to compete fairly. And so when there is situations where drugging has happened, I think you need to really stamp it out quick so that the field continues to be level. That's my feeling. I'm not like dwelling on one situation or one this, one that isn't really what I'm doing. For me, it's just we need to do whatever is necessary to keep the level playing field. And if you let things slide, it's going to get worse, not better. Like just ignoring is not a good idea. So it has to be dealt with, has to be dealt firmly. And right now it's not being dealt firmly, obviously, because we're talking about it and there's lots of, well, it's kind of messy right now, to be honest. To have people competing that have tested positive just doesn't send a very good message. And I'm just not sure the playing field is as level as it should be. And I think that's really important for all athletes that are competing.
Yeah, Kev, what might seem unfair when it comes to doping, you know, if one guy on a bobsled team for Team Canada tests positive, should it wipe out the whole country's entry into the Olympics? That seems a little heavy.
Right. And that these are all the decisions that are going to have to be made. And the rules are going to have to be strict and adhered to. Before 2010, so when it comes to medication, just so everybody knows, so I've got asthma and I take a puffer. So before the 2010 Olympics, so I had to go into some testing because I wanted to take the puffer with me to the Olympic Games. And it's not allowed unless you can prove that you have the lung problems that you know would have you need Ventolin. So anyway, I went into all these testing and they put me on a bike and I had to go at a certain speed for a certain amount of time. And then in the first case, they gave me this super strong, I don't know what it was, some sort of a medication, not Ventolin that I normally take, but this other type. Well, my God, I have never felt that good. Like my lungs were wide open. Like I went on the bike again. I've never felt so good. It was clear. My lungs were clear. I could just give her. It was amazing. Anyway, then I go on the bike a couple hours later when I had nothing. And then they tested my capacity in my lungs with and without. And it was deemed that I had asthma. Well, no doubt. But then it was allowed. I was allowed to take the Ventolin. It was approved. So when it comes to medication that people take because of conditions they have in Canada, like it's already known what you have approved for whatever you have in your life. So that's kind of weird that any athlete would take a medication that wouldn't have already been approved. I couldn't have taken the Ventolin into the village. If I was tested for it, I would have been positive. Like I would have been a positive test. But of course, it was all pre-done before, making sure I had the ailment that I said I did. So then it was fine to take the drug I do.
What's kind of amazing on this one, Warren, is how do you possibly take a medication but have not checked whether it's on the list of banned substances? This doping has been around for a long time now, right? Where it came to the forefront a long time ago. I don't get it at all that we go, oh, okay, we overlooked that one and now we're suspended. You know what I'm saying, Warren?
I think whatever's going on with Russia, it's not by accident because these athletes are all very, very careful. So I don't think that's the issue at all. But I guess time will tell what's going to happen there.
Drop us an email if you want to weigh in on that subject or any other subject. That's Hot Rock Topics. Thanks a lot to Coyote Tractor for bringing that each and every week. Okay, now it's time for Mailbag, brought to you by Nestle Boost. Up your nutrition game with Boost, which I do. Convenient meal replacement drinks with a taste you're guaranteed to love. Dave Bullock writes us an email from Castlegar, BC. Why not alternate hammer every end so each team is guaranteed an equal number of last rocks? Would there be less incentive to blank ends? The winner of the draw to the button would have the choice of hammer in the odd or even ends. So let's go with you, Kev.
Well, it's not a ridiculous idea, I don't think, other than, if, let's say it's an 8-end game. It doesn't matter, 8 or 10. If I win the draw to the button, I get hammer in all the evens. I get in 2, 4, 6, and 8. It's a dream. It's an absolute dream. Brad Gushue is probably the best at it right now in controlling the hammer. And if you watch Brad Gushue play, when he's playing well and wins all the time, he magically has hammer in 4, 6, and 8 or 6, 8, and 10 in a 10-end game. And if you can do that, you're going to win most of the time. So that's the only problem I see with this alternating at every end is whoever gets hammering the even ends are going to win a lot because you want that hammer coming home. It's just a huge advantage. So that would be the only problem. I guess you could maybe look at deciding if you wanted to have hammer in 2 and 4 and then switch it around like in football where you can receive in the one half and then the other team receives in the second half. Maybe you have hammer in 2 and 4, 5 and 7, I suppose, maybe. But you sure couldn't give one team hammer in 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. Oh, my goodness. That team would be jumping, doing backflips.
I think David has maybe the right idea, but I think quite not the the positioning I would do. I think something that could really be looked at would be to have the choice at the start of the game. If it's a 10-end game, do you want first rock in the first end or the sixth end, but you don't get both? And I think that would change a whole pile of things and the fact that it would balance things out considerably because the hammer has become so important right now, particularly in the 8-end game. If you have hammer and you're a good team, no matter how good the team is you're playing against, and we saw that in the trials final between Jacobs and Gushue, as soon as you've got that hammer, you've got the edge. And if you're playing really well, it's going to be hard to take that away from you. But if you've got a choice, first or sixth end, I think that changes things considerably. So that's one I think that could be looked at and maybe should be tried to see what it does.
We sure get a lot of emails and input on our Facebook page and everything with people who want to change the game. I like the 10-end game. I don't mind the way it is, but...
Jim?
You know, I knew Warren wouldn't like this, Kevin. I knew he wouldn't like this.
It's got to go because of the length of time involved and where everything is heading. It'll kill us if that continues.
If we read your email on the show, you are, in fact, going to win something. Warren's written a book called Sticks and Stones. And David, you are now the winner of a digital copy of that. Congratulations. Appreciate it. We'll be sending you a code and you will get Warren's book. Warren, and that book is out now, right? It's in all sorts of places.
It's out there, yes. The number one place to probably find it is on the website that I have for the book, which is warrenhansenauthor.com. It's in some bookstores, but not all. So that's the best place to look for it.
Okay, that was Mailbag. Thanks a lot, everyone, for sending us your emails. InsideCurling@gmail.com and Nestle Boost. We appreciate them sponsoring that segment.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate. Available now.
Well, one of my favorite segments of the show that we do each and every week is called In the House, where we bring on a guest. In the House is brought to you by Goldline. Goldline curling equipment can be found in pro shops and curling stores all around the world. Plus, there are retail stores in Calgary, London, Scarborough, Mississauga, and 2 stores in Ottawa. Goldline can be found at every Grand Slam of curling event and online anytime at goldlinecurling.com. And this week's guest, fresh off a huge victory in Northern Ontario, is EJ Harnden, Brier champion, Grand Slam champion, Olympic gold medalist. And he joins us now on the show, freshly crowned and on his way to the Brier. There he is knocking. Come on in, EJ. How are you, man?
Good, good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Break it down for us. How was the play downs here? You won in a close game at the end. How was the whole week?
It was good. We won in an extra end. So it was maybe a little tighter than we had to anticipated, but always knowing that, you know, we're going to get everyone's best game in Northern Ontario and interprovincials, always knowing that it's going to be, you know, tough and it's going to be a battle. And so this time we were able to, you know, kind of be able to make it through a really tough game against a really good opponent. And we're able to do it here in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Actually, our provincials were at Sioux Curlers here in our hometown of Sault Ste. Marie. after they were postponed earlier due to COVID and restrictions. So we were able to win and win at home. So it was great.
How did they manage it all with COVID, EJ? Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, so sure. So just taking a quick step back, our provincials were originally supposed to be in Kenora, same time as the Scotties. So they were going to have the Scotties provincials. So they were going to have the men's and women's at the beginning of February. That was postponed due to COVID and some of the Ontario restrictions. And then, so we were able to reschedule here for Sault Ste. Marie this past week. So we started on Thursday, ended on Sunday. It was 16 round robin, top two teams straight to the final, and then the final on Sunday. And so there was no testing or anything actually in place. They had kind of bubbled it off for the players. So all the, you know, typical restrictions in terms of making sure that we came to the rink dressed, no kind of contact with ourselves and the fans. There was a small amount of people that were able to watch from the upstairs kind of viewing area. And then just ourselves on the ice, and then the sheets kind of distanced apart. So, you know, they did as much as they could in order to make sure that there was a safe environment for us as the players. And I thought they did a really good job, and everyone felt really comfortable out there. And we're all really grateful and happy that we're able to have the event.
Yeah, cool. Before we bring in the boys, we were just talking before you came on, and I never realized this. Of course, you and your brother on the and Brad have been together a long time. I would just assume that you've been to 13 Briars with Brad as the skip, but that's not the case. Who was on your team at your first Briar?
Yeah, sure. So it was my father, Eric, who was the skip. I played third. My brother, Ryan, played second. Caleb Flaxey was our lead. And Brad was actually our alternate. And so he came with us. Brad went to his first Briar in 2007 with our uncle, Al. Kevin, I think he might have beat you there.
They did.
But we actually played against Brad in 2008. We weren't playing together, and then we formed our team after that in 2009. So our first Briar was myself, my brother, my father, Caleb, and then Brad as our alternate.
Let's start with the Olympics. Let's go to the Olympics because it's on right now, and you being Olympic gold medalist. Canada seems to be doing okay now. What are your thoughts on our Canadian teams? Like, obviously, let's stay away from the mixed doubles. Let's talk men's and women's here. I'd love to get your thoughts on it because everybody was sort of panicking early with Jennifer being at 1-3. And Brad even was struggling a little bit for a couple of games. But your thoughts on how our teams are doing and the pressure that they feel wearing that maple leaf?
Yeah, you know what? I think they're doing quite well. I think, you know, the days of Canada being winning every single game and being undefeated and you know, guaranteed to win an Olympic gold medal or a medal for that matter is gone. And, you know, the expectation should be a little bit more that Canada is going to have to battle for a playoff spot. And then once they get themselves into the playoffs, if they do that, you know, it's not going to be a guarantee for a medal or for gold. And so I think they're doing extremely well. They probably had the expectations amongst themselves that they were going to have to battle and there'll be a few losses in there and not a perfect record. And I go back to our experience. I mean, we started 1-2. Right? We won our first game. We lost two. We found out very quickly, I think, by putting ourselves on social media, you know, the pressure that comes with being Team Canada and learning very quickly that we needed to separate ourselves from that. And then we just, you know, we did a really good job of kind of coming together and just focusing in on what was within our control. And I think you're seeing both of the men's and women's teams doing that right now, right? Is they've lost a couple of games and maybe not had their best at times, but I think they're doing a really, really good job of just staying within the moment and focusing in on what they can control, which is the next game in front of them, and more importantly, the next shot. And so I think they're in a really good spot with the games that they have left. And, you know, the main objective is get yourself into that playoff round and then anything can happen. And that's where I think the experience from Brad and Jen will shine.
You know, Warren brought up a really good point earlier today with the draw to the button, the last shot challenge. And Canada's actually didn't do very well with that in the mixed doubles or the women's or the men's. I'd like to hear your thoughts on your regimen, your practice regimen, as to stepping on the ice. And nobody's thrown any rocks yet. And now you need to be able to throw your in turn and out turn, clockwise, counterclockwise, whichever you want to look at it, to start the game and have both draws count. It's become so important now that there aren't any tiebreakers at the world level events. How does your team do it so that when you guys step on the ice and you have to do the two draws total distance to have your best chance possible? Because it just seems to be quite a coincidence that our mixed doubles, our women's, and our men's are all struggling in that regard, and it's so important. Is there something that maybe we're kind of leaving out of our training that's slowing us down in that regard?
Well, I think you could bring up a good point, Kevin. I mean, the first time that we had to actually go through that was at the trials. I would say, you know, probably with most teams, we're very thorough in our approach. And so we had it mapped out, you know, who was going to throw what turn, what draw with who, right? And who's holding the broom, who's sweeping, all those sorts of different things. And then based on your opponent. And so I think, you know, really it comes down to exactly what you just said is having the proper preparation in place and then being able to practice it. I'm sure Brad and Jen and their teams went through that process in their pre-event practice, you know, even in quarantine in their practice sessions leading up to the Olympics. And I think it's unfortunately one of those things that we're going to have to kind of continue to get used to and put in as part of our development and practice routine outside of competition. And I would say at times, you know, maybe it's true or not. I'm not sure. I kind of get the sense of this when, you know, when looking at some of the other world teams, I feel like, you know, these are some of the things that probably they have been practicing for a longer period of time or as part of their kind of practice routines. And especially when all members are together at all times. So it's just, again, it's a little bit different approach or a little bit different kind of makeup between our teams and some of the other world teams.
Over the interviews that I've done with a whole bunch of the curlers this fall at the Grand Slam, in regards to the draw of the button, I know that some of the European teams will actually go into their building of 6 sheets or 8 sheets, whatever the building is. The ice maker will make all the sheets ready to go for that particular team. And when they're practicing their last stone draw, they'll go to the end sheet, step on a brand new sheet. They do the exact practice amount of minutes and then the outturn intern draw. Then they go to the next sheet, brand new sheet. And they do their practice time, outturn intern draw. Next sheet, next sheet, next sheet, next sheet. And that's how they start their practice session, is by doing the last stone draw, counterclockwise, clockwise, and on a brand new sheet. So it replicates exactly what you have to go through at the start of a game. And they do it on all the sheets across the board. I think that's so smart, because if you do that, you know, even once a week all year, you're probably going to get better at it than just practicing.
100% agree. And I mean, kind of taking a step back, you know, going to before, you know, this method, and going into, you know, where it was one person that could throw the draw the button all the time, right? And then they changed it to, you know, every player has to throw two. You know, when we were going into that, before we had to, you know, go through it and experience it, let's say at Breyer, we would start practicing earlier in the year or even during slams where we didn't have to, where, you know, I would throw, you know, a couple of draws and Ryan would throw a couple of draws and Mark, just because we wanted to get ourselves used to having to do that in the bigger events where it was required. And I don't think this is any different, Kevin, and to your point, I truly believe the way that we prepare and practice and train has come a long way as Canadian teams, but I think there's a lot of room for improvement and some things that we can take in learning from the world teams in terms of how they prepare, regardless of the fact that maybe not all four members are together at the same time. That's going to allow us to become better and be more comfortable with some of the kind of different rule changes that have been put in place and will continue to be there for the next number of years.
Okay, EJ, so let's stay on Olympics for a minute and we'll put you out on the limb here. We'll take Canada the mix. If we aren't picking Canada and you look at the men's and the women's so far from what you've seen, and you had to pick a winner, who would you pick on the men's side and who would you pick on the women's side if it wasn't Canada?
If it wasn't Canada, I'm going to go on the men's side with Sweden. And on the women's side, I'm going to go with Switzerland.
Okay, good choices. So you're overlooking Bruce, the buzzsaw Bruce Mowat, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? You know, and my rationale there is, you know, basically Bruce's performance at World Championships. This is his first Olympics. And, you know, we talked about the pressure that comes with being at the Olympics, obviously greater in Canada than I think any other country. But Bruce has been really hyped up as, and rightfully so, as the team to beat. And so, you know, I'll be interested to see how he and team handles that, assuming they get to the playoff round. And I think Nicholas has proven time and time again that not only is he a great player and his team is flawless and extremely strong as well, but he knows and has shown his ability to win the big games on the biggest stage. And he also doesn't have an Olympic gold medal. He has two other colors with one missing. And I think, you know, Nicholas is extremely driven to make that medal gold and get past the silver and bronze. So I'm interested to see how everything goes. But if I had to pick right now, that's my rationale for Sweden and Nicholas taking home gold.
Yeah, probably pretty good analysis of what's taking place there. And I'd have to agree. So let's talk about your team for a minute. So you played in Northern Ontario Playdowns, but you were minus Mark Kennedy. Who replaced Mark? And is he coming back to play with you in the Brier?
Yeah, so obviously Mark's with Team Canada and helping there at the Olympics. And, you know, when we went through all that, our provincials were supposed to be before Mark had to leave for quarantine. And so obviously plans changed. But Jordan Chandler, he came and he played. He was in the house, so calling line for Brad, but throwing second stones. I continued to sweep and threw third stones. And Jordan is someone that we've beaten in a couple provincial finals over the years here in Northern Ontario. Always a really strong, great player, and someone that we've always really got along with on the ice and off the ice, and just a really good person overall. So we asked Jordan if he'd come and play with us, and he fit in extremely well. Obviously, you know, as we talked about earlier, we were able to kind of sneak out that win. And then Jordan's actually going to come with us as our fifth to the Brier, and Mark's going to come back from the Olympics and slot back in at third, and we'll have our regular lineup.
So let's talk about the Brier a little bit farther. So for the second year in a row, it's going to be structured a little differently than it has been. It's going to have 18 teams in it. Three of those teams are going to come from the ranking system, the 14 from the Provincial Territorial Associations and Team Canada. How do you like the 18-team idea versus the 16-team or 14? What would you like to see?
The format and the makeup that I like the best, you know, I have a little bit of bias here, is the original format and original makeup of no Team Canada, Team Northern Ontario, no wild card spots. And that's maybe just like a purist at heart. I just think right now we're in a really awkward stage with the Brier, and it feels like we're trying to kind of do two different things where we're, you know, we want it to be a true Canadian championship, but we want, you know, to make sure kind of the best teams are in it so that it, you know, so it feels like we're in a little bit of an awkward kind of stage here, transition stage. And so I think it works, but I think that, you know, over the next couple of years, in order to truly kind of help the sport grow at, you know, the elite level, but also at the, you know, lower levels as well, I think the Brier kind of needs to go through a little bit of an overhaul and figure out what its purpose is in the sport as an event. Is it truly your Canadian championship? Or is it still like, you know, a championship that can reside outside of what will be, I guess, you know, Canadian championship where there's no provinces involved and it's just your top X amount of teams across the country? So long way of answering it, but my favorite kind of makeup is more of the traditional format versus where we're at now.
Well, one question for EJ, kind of an obvious question when you want to go back to the traditional play, which of course I played in Briars like that a lot. And I don't disagree with you if the Brier wishes to do that. I guess if you're going to go back to that structure, should the Brier winner even go to Worlds then? Because now you're missing a ton of your best teams. If you're from a province that has six good teams and only one can get in, you've really watered down the field. So I guess the question I would ask is, in that case, should the Brier winner go to the Worlds? You could have the Brier that way as an amateur championship, but I guess how do you send a team out of the watered down event to a Worlds?
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you, Kevin. And I think that's the hard challenge for Curling Canada right now. right? And you know, looking at our sport like holistically, is it, the Brier is the staple event, you know, of our sport outside of the Olympics year in and year out, right? And there's a lot of tradition. So, for example, my personal opinion is, you know, if you were to make the Brier a true Canadian championship, no provinces, you know, involved, it's just your top teams, and therefore you have your quote unquote, you know, potential best representative with all the top teams there in your Canadian championship, and it's the Brier, there's a massive rebranding strategy and investment probably that has to go in that, because I think there's a lot of tradition that comes with the Brier in terms of, you know, those that are actually there in the seat watching. A lot of that, my personal opinion, comes from cheering for their province, regardless of who is actually there representing it, because of that tradition. So I don't disagree with you. I just think there comes a point where they'll probably have to go one way or the other and kind of commit to that. You know, there's a lot of kind of dominoes that fall out of that as well. So that's why I say it's a little bit, from my perspective, it's in a little bit of a transition stage, because I think we're trying to do a little bit of both to satisfy, you know, different areas. And yeah, I still think we're a little ways off.
We're on the fence.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. It's kind of lost in the middle somewhere, and it's got to go one way or the other, back to the traditional start like you're talking about, or going forward into the best teams, period. So I think you're right, EJ. That's a great point.
Because here's the thing too, right? It's like, obviously I'm competing at the highest level, and I'm one of those players that is fortunate enough to be able to do that. We also need to think about the sport as a whole and the growth, and that there is something there for others that are coming up to strive to compete, to want to play in or be a part of. So I think that's, again, we need to be careful of how, you know, some of the decisions that are made and where we go with this, because we also want to make sure that there is the right levels and structures in place that will enable our sport to grow and have, you know, continuous involvement from, you know, especially at the younger ages, to get them encouraged to want to play and continue to play, because, you know, you get to the point of having to choose between university education and curling or occupation in curling. I mean, I think personally you're starting to see, unfortunately, loss of athletes in our sport because of that. And that's where, again, it's just having to be careful in the decisions that are made, that we're not just making decisions that are going to benefit, you know, the top level. It needs to benefit the sport as a whole as well.
I totally agree with that. And that's why I think it has to change, because having EJ Harnden go to 13 Briars, you're not helping the young people in Northern Ontario, or having Grattan go to, I don't know how many he's been to now, or Gushu going to whatever he's been to, 19 of them or something. And so you get to all these provinces. And these good curlers, like a Jennifer Jones in the women's, you name, I could name lots, who are blocking all the young people from getting to go onto any kind of a stage. So that's exactly the problem I see. I see the way it is traditionally is a complete blockage for the young people coming up. So I think that's exactly what's stopping the growth of curling, is actually the keeping it traditional for the growth of curling is actually choking out the young people curling. Somebody like Zacharias in Manitoba, had they not went to a million wild cards and had Jennifer go to the Olympics, she might not have got to a stage till she was 38 years old. That doesn't help.
But I also don't think it, this to me extends beyond, you know, Curling Canada events as well. I mean, the slams to me are another area where that there needs to be changes made, so that you have, yes, you have that one, you know, tier two, you know, the tier one, tier two events, but to be able to have a few more of those, because even when you look at the slams, it's not much different, right? It's a lot of the same teams that are playing day in, you know, event after event. And so that's part of that feeding ground as well. So I think, again, a holistic approach in terms of how we're looking at things across the board, whether it's Grand Slams, Curling Canada, I agree that there's areas that need to be improved or could be improved, so that we're looking after, you know, the growth of our game as well.
Now, don't shoot the messenger here, EJ, okay, with this question, but it's often asked, where people say, why is Ontario so lucky that they get divided up into two different areas, that there's a Northern Ontario. How come other provinces can't do that? And I said, okay, I'll ask EJ.
Yeah, now I'm going
to. Hey, Jimmy, that's a good one.
And I'm going to have the answer, right? I don't, you know what? I don't have the answer. Maybe, you know, that's a question for Curling Canada. But I know that Northern Ontario has been a part of the Brier, I believe, since 1927. And from what I've been told, you know, just the sheer size of the province in terms of geography, right? You know, the distance to travel, I believe is why it was put in place in 1927. Because, I mean, even for myself, to drive from Sault Ste. Marie to, you know, to Thunder Bay or to Kenora, you know, you're in the car for 10, almost to 14 hours. That's kind of the rationale that I believe was in place when they made the decision way back when. It was just based on the sheer size of Ontario and its geography. So that's the best answer I have.
Well, I think it's pretty good. Look at a map, people, and you'll see what he's talking about. Before we go, EJ, you know, when I was doing the Brier Patch and you guys came in, I remember the talk of the town was, look at the size of these guys physically. And it was the first time people looked up and went, oh, my God, these guys all look like bodybuilders. And then that trend kind of was set. And you can see other teams right now that guys are jacked. Was that something you guys made a conscious decision about, that you had to hit the gym and lift weights like maniacs coming in? How did that all happen?
No, you know what? I think two different things. I actually think, you know, not just because I'm on the show, but I actually think Kevin and his team kind of started that, you know, with John and Ben and Mark. They're all of them in being really good shape and seeing the kind of and hearing about the time and effort that they were putting in. And so I think we were coming up when that was happening. And so we kind of just embraced it and continued to maybe evolve it a little bit, I would say. And the other piece is that all of us kind of came from different athletic backgrounds as well, right? So like myself and Ryan, we grew up before curling, playing rep tournament hockey, playing all other different sports and different, you know, elements of athletics. So that's kind of ingrained in a lot of, you know, other sports, maybe a little bit more than it was with curling. So it was just kind of always a part of our training. And then I, you know, think it kind of naturally evolved from there. And we're proud to be kind of a part of that coming, you know, learning from Kevin and his team and evolving it and maybe taking it to a little bit of a new level. And if anyone kind of attributes some of that to our team, you know, whether that's true or not, we're grateful for it. And I think it's just nice to see where our sport is today versus even, you know, 10 years ago. And I think it's going to continue to evolve, which it should, right? Like any sport would and should.
When you guys came into the patch and I said, look at the size of these guys. I was on the mic. I said, okay, take your shirts off, fellas. And you turned to me and went, get out of my face. I'm not doing that. But Ryan Fry absolutely ripped his shirt open like Superman. Yeah, he's like, here you go, man. It was terrific.
And I will say just quickly on that too, actually just sharing an Olympic story. When we were at the Olympics and kind of, you know, walking through the village and meeting some of the other athletes, no one thought we were curlers. Like they, you know, people were guessing, you know, we were bobsledders, we were this or that. And when we told them we were curlers, they kind of gave us a little bit of a look. So I think that, you know, that was a nice little surprise. But yeah, it's great to see where our sport is at now. And like you said, you kind of take a peek of the players and both male and female on the ice. And it looks very different, which is, I think, a really good thing.
Thanks a lot. EJ Harndon has been our guest. Your team is on the way to the Brier. Congratulations to Brad Jacobs and the rest of your team, and we wish you all the best. EJ, thanks a lot for coming on it, and good luck at the Brier.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, EJ. Good luck.
Thanks, EJ. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day. Thanks again.
Okay, time to pull up a rocking chair, Warren. We're going to hear another story from Kevin, and we do it each and every show. Storytime is brought to you by Meridian Manufacturing, your industrial and on-farm storage and handling partners, and proud sponsor of the Grand Slam of curling. All right, Kev, what do you got for us this week? What's your story?
Well, this is a good one, and you speak of Meridian Manufacturing, and during these years, Meridian was with our team. So Sid Lockhart from Meridian, he's going to love this story. So it's great that it's brought to you by Meridian, because Meridian's going to love this. This has to do with Jules. So in the 2010 Olympics, try to keep the stories to the Olympics because, of course, we're in the middle of the Olympics. In 2010, so Jules had been coaching me at that point for about 25 years, and he wanted a big favor in the final of the Olympics in Vancouver. He said, Skippy, during this game, you've got to promise that you'll call a timeout, because Jules had never come out on the ice in timeouts. If we call a timeout, John and I, or back in the day, Don Walchuk and I, would discuss the situation. The team would get together and we decide what we're going to do. But Jules would never come on the ice. But he wanted us to set up a timeout, and then Jules would come out on the ice, okay? And he can get his 30 seconds of fame in front of a huge Olympic audience worldwide. So that's it. We got her set up. Okay. So in the seventh end of the final, there's not much going on. A couple of rocks in play, but there's certainly no reason for a timeout. John says, hey, Kevin, I think it's time for a timeout. And I go, oh, yeah. Yep, timeout. So the umpire comes out, of course, wondering why are we calling a timeout? Makes no sense. But anyway, whatever. Comes out, and he asks, do you want your coach to come out? Absolutely, we want coach to come out. And then the official knew what was going on. He knew that the gig was, So, of course, he goes, yep, I'll go get Jules. Okay. So he heads to get Jules for the timeout. And the timeout doesn't start until the coach makes it down from where they are, down the stairs and then out to the ice surface. It takes about 45 seconds, maybe a minute, for the coach to get out there. So anyway, we're just standing there waiting for Jules to make his big entrance in the final. And anyway, so umpire's not coming back. Where's Jules? Anyway, so the umpire comes out to us and says, Kevin, can't find Jules. So sure enough, Jules, I guess because the end wasn't very interesting, he went down the stairs and he went out to the cafeteria to get a donut and some coffee. So they couldn't find him.
What a coach.
So we just had to keep, I said, well, forget it then. We'll just keep going. And so we used up our time out, and Jules never got his 30 seconds of fame at the 2010 Olympics. And that was a big deal that Jules wanted to have that timeout, but he was busy getting a donut and coffee.
That is so funny. Where's the coach? Oh, he's having a snack, you know? He's got to get a little sustenance here before the end of the game. Great stuff, Kevin. Love that story. You're going to give teams, Kevin, a really good idea. Take a timeout and then bring your whole family on for 30 seconds. Bring everyone on. That's great. Thanks a lot to Meridian for bringing us story time. Okay, boys, well done. During a week when you guys must be exhausted with everything you're doing around the games in Beijing. And we got a few more days to go to wrap up that. And we thank everyone for tuning into the Daily Show and, of course, our weekly show. Inside Curling is reaching out to curling clubs all over the world and inviting you to contact us and set up a one-hour Zoom call with myself, Kevin, and Warren to discuss anything you like. Please keep in mind we're doing it on a limited basis to see how it goes and if this is something Inside Curling should consider to offer going forward. So let us know. We also want to extend a big thank you to Rod Paulson, who handles all of our Facebook, our page, and our Facebook group. It's been terrific and very lively. If you haven't joined, why don't you join now? And we get 400 or 500 people every week or two joining. And Warren, you keep a close eye on all this stuff. And we love everyone's input. So join the conversation. You want to email us, do it. InsideCurling@gmail.com. Again, we'd love to hear from you. And again, finally, a reminder, until the Olympics ends, we're going to give you a daily show. It's called Daily Draw. It comes on about 1 o'clock Eastern with everything that's going on at the games. Kev, back to bed for you. Warren, back to bed for you.
Yeah, it's been a long morning.
We had some technical issues, folks. So if you love this show, thank the editor. Take it easy, Kev. We'll talk to you later, Warren.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate. Available now.